Graham.
And welcome to Street Knowledge. I am Chris Graham, and Monday podcast. Normally, people who watch our podcast pay attention to our Facebook Lives. You know that we do mostly lighter fare here on Street Knowledge. And on our Facebook Lives, we talk important stuff like football and wrestling and baseball and a little bit of politics, more the mechanics of politics than anything else. Today, you know, I'm searching through what I could do for topics, and there's a lot of things we can jump into. It was really hard for me to do anything other than the Las Vegas news, even though that's more than half a country away. It seems like half a world away in some sense, and in some sense not. We have experience here in Virginia with our own mass shooting, the Virginia Tech shooting back in 2007, which seems like, in one sense, so long ago, and in another sense, so near and dear to our hearts, unfortunately, for those who have those memories. We hold all those who lost their lives in that in high esteem, and so the same for Las Vegas. And so we're going to discuss that today, the latest news. As of right now, it's 3 o'clock on the East Coast on Monday. The latest we have, and I was just scanning the internet just to make sure this is the latest, 58 dead, more than 500 injured at a mass shooting at an outdoor concert, country music concert in Las Vegas. Apparently a three-day-long country music festival that drew concert goers from all over the world, certainly all over the country. I know one person who wasn't there for the concert but happens to be in Las Vegas, former producer of a TV show that I used to host, George Lilly, is out in Vegas right now, and he was witness to not the shooting itself but people running from the scene, as he put on Facebook earlier today. So people across the world are impacted by this. We've all felt this in some way, shape, or form. Jason Aldean was on stage as someone who's performed locally at the John Paul Jones Arena just over the mountain from us here in Charlottesville. We're based in Waynesboro, Virginia. He performed at the University of Virginia not that long ago. He was performing on stage. The show was wrapping up apparently at 10 o'clock local time, 1 o'clock Eastern time, overnight, Sunday night into Monday morning for us here locally. And having seen video of, well, him performing one, it was obvious that it wasn't very apparent right away what was happening. Some folks have reported that they thought it was fireworks, again, an outdoor event, and perhaps that was part of the show, so to speak, that there were fireworks maybe going off at the end of the show. Aldean got off the stage safely. His band did as well, but in the chaos, again, 58 killed, over 500, at least as we know right now, injured, shot. And wounded various degrees. I know one hospital in Las Vegas had over 100 patients. A first-level trauma care hospital had over 100 patients transported, and we'll talk about logistics in a little bit. What we know about the shooter, not much. A guy named Stephen Paddock, 64 years old, a retired a man who lived in Mesquite, Nevada, about 70 miles away, I understand from doing some Google map searches from Las Vegas, about an hour's drive from Vegas. Apparently a person who visited Vegas frequently, loved to gamble. One report on one of the news websites, I think it may have been the Wall Street Journal or Washington Post website, said that he had been involved recently in some high-stakes gambling, high-dollar gambling, and had some large transactions of note of in the recent weeks. No note as to whether those transactions were positive or negative for his bank account, so no idea if that had any influence on what happened. Also, what's odd about this is the shooting, we're now 14 hours past when the shooting happened. Normally by this time in a sort of crowdsourcing part of public knowledge of an investigation, we would know a lot more about the shooter from social media activity, of course, reporters from different news outlets reaching out to family members, etc., to learn more about the Stephen Paddock, what may have motivated him, what may have had him tick in the direction of perpetrating what's now being called the worst, the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. And no indications, no red flag saying that this gentleman had this in his background, or he had gone through a recent, say, breakup, divorce, some sort of family issues of any kind that we know of right now. As of right now, we don't know that he left any kind of a note behind. He did, according to police reports, shoot himself at the end of this rampage, whether that was because the police were bearing down on him or he had prepared ahead of time, knowing that if he's going to perpetrate this kind of a mass homicide, that he would end up being apprehended, maybe even shot in a by police in a as he was being apprehended. We don't know, but we have not heard any news of any suicide note left behind, any notes left behind anywhere. His home has been searched. We've been told, again, no word on that. And so it's a mystery. And it's almost like nothing could make sense, certainly, of someone shooting hundreds of people at a concert from the 32nd floor window of an adjoining hotel. Open air, people were basically sitting ducks, unfortunately, in this open air concert. Anybody who's been to a big open air concert, there was one just recently at the Scott Stadium in Charlottesville at the University of Virginia, the Unity concert in Charlottesville organized by the Dave Matthews Band. You're out, you know, you're again, if people are at elevated position, 32nd floor window, even from a far distance, they would have certainly superiority over you to be able to pick and choose, and not even have to pick and choose. I mean, people were ducking and covering and doing the best they could, but he didn't have to look at anybody. And we've seen TV news crews broadcasting this afternoon from that hotel from a similar vantage point a few floors up, and people across the way would have been small targets. You wouldn't be shooting at individual people. You would just be spraying as much as you could. And he was apparently had access to 8 to 10, we're told by various news reports, machine guns to be able to fire off hundreds of rounds a second. I have, you know, it's been a long time, but I participated in a Citizens Police Academy in neighboring Stanton, Virginia, about 10 miles to my west, about 10, 12 years ago. And as part of that Citizens Police Academy training, we went out one Saturday to the local shooting range that the local law enforcement here use in our region, Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta County, Virginia State Police. And it's at a landfill, you know, the kind of typical location you would assume, landfill out remote, far away. And this landfill is at least a couple of miles away from Interstate 81, a main artery connecting north and south that runs through the valley here. And we were told, even a couple miles away from the interstate, hey, be careful where you aim that assault rifle. We shot a handgun, we shot a rifle, then we shot an assault rifle. And in each of those, I mean, the handgun could shoot, I guess it was a six shooter. The rifle had a lot of kick to it, and you know, we had a few. It felt like a couple seconds in between each shot. The assault rifle, this wasn't a machine gun. This was a police assault rifle, but not a machine gun. I was told 23 shots per second, and only imagine and the power the quickness, the power. I can only imagine the sheer terror as hundreds of shots a second were raining down on folks at this concert. And it's you know, I hope this is not the case, but it seems to me that perhaps the numbers we've heard, the 58 dead, 500 plus wounded, we may still see an amendment upwards of those numbers, just based on the fact there were 22,000 people reportedly at this concert. As again, the main featured performer was concluding the concert last night, and folks were understandably enjoying the show at the end of a long weekend of great music in Vegas, one of the top tourist destinations in the world, and then subjected to what happened there. So we've seen, interestingly, ISIS, the terror group, claiming responsibility for this. The idea that ISIS had anything to do with a white man named Stephen Paddock from Mesquite, Nevada, who apparently had lived in 27 different residences, various media organizations have tracked over the course of his lifetime. Most recently in Nevada, but had moved from Florida not too long ago. Had made his living, continue to make his living, we're told, by the media reports, by managing apartment houses with properties that he and his mother owned. Reportedly not the most we have from traffic indication or criminal indications was a traffic summons from a few years ago. Apparently he had once sued one of the casinos in Vegas after a fall, but then withdrew that suit a couple of years later. Why this person would be have any ties to ISIS is absolutely ridiculous to even think. ISIS is trolling all of us when they do that. And it makes you wonder now, and this is something I've wondered for a while, but ISIS is usually quick to claim responsibility for anything that goes on that even kind of vaguely resembles a terrorist attack. This would seem to indicate that they troll us an awful lot, and probably trying to troll our president as well into making a quick snap judgment. Question from Scott German, and it's a good question. Why would a private citizen need an assault weapon? That's a question that we ask every time we have one of these shootings. After the Pulse nightclub shooting from a year ago, after the Sandy Hook shooting from 5 years ago, after the Virginia Tech shootings of 11 years or 10 years ago. This is 2017. So we ask this question all the time. And certainly it's a time. I just finished watching the press conference with Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the press spokesperson for President Trump, who repeatedly answered the question that was thrown to her various ways by members of the media about policy issues related to gun control. That now is not the time to be asking those questions. This is now a time of unity. And of course, when it's time to ask those questions, we'll still ignore them. That wasn't what she said, but it was certainly the implication. It's a fair question. And we'll talk more about that as we go on. But I wanted to mention the ISIS claim of responsibility just because, again, I think they're trolling us, and that seems to be pretty clear. One thing that I thought about and thought about a lot since this news has hit security at outdoor events of this nature and any kind of nature, really. My wife went to the Unity concert in Charlottesville last week at a football, in a football stadium that is, obviously a 60,000 seat stadium. A lot of college football stadiums across the country that size or bigger. One thing she noted was that her friend had expressed concern about the relatively low level airplanes that were flying overhead. At the Unity concert, of course, we were talking about being in Charlottesville. The Unity concert was put together to sort of promote healing after the terrible events of August 12th here in Virginia, the white supremacist rally that went awry, surprisingly not, and I say that sarcastically. And so the idea was, hey, there was a legitimate concern about people wanting to use that Unity concert in negative ways. And so the idea that planes were flying so low overhead, so low overhead, was a concern to my wife's a person attending the show with her. I'm losing my train of thought on that. And so there's that, now, and that's something that, I've had the experience of going through Secret Service security several times. I've covered presidential events, both locally and at the White House over the years. And if you've never had the experience of going through an event where a president is in attendance, president or former president is in attendance, if you have had that experience, you know that that there's every level of detail of security that you can imagine, and many levels beyond what you can imagine in terms of security. I remember the first presidential event I covered was in 1997, where then President Clinton, then Vice President Al Gore, we're going to give a speech at Wintergreen Resort, which is just over the mountain from where I'm located, about 15 miles away. And we local reporters went to cover. Now, we didn't get to cover much. Literally, what we got to cover, that was a closed speech, a closed-to-press speech at Wintergreen Resort. So we didn't have access to the Wintergreen Resort. What we had access to was when the helicopters landed in a field at the bottom of the mountain, President Clinton, Vice President Gore got off their helicopters, got into a car, and then rode up the mountain, and then 4 hours later, they got back out of those cars and got back on helicopters and left. We had literally maybe 2 seconds of whatever proximity we had to the president and vice president that day. I remember it was a great thing for our photographer to actually get a picture of Bill Clinton waving, because that I didn't even see it. It was that quick, but she got the photo. For that access, this event, I want to say, started around 11 o'clock that day. We had to be at the event around 7 o'clock in the morning. Everything on us had to be sniffed by, searched, wanded, and we were all sniffed by bomb-sniffing dogs, including I had a notebook just like this one right here. Well, it wasn't a Lamar Jackson. I'm not sure if Lamar Jackson was even born yet, but it was a notebook just like this. And you pick these things up at sporting events, at sport media events all the time. So that's why I have a Lamar Jackson notebook, kind of like anything else. A lot of sports stuff. You see the sports memory really behind me. It's usually a sports podcast, right? So everything had to go through that security. And since then, I mean, the level of security that a president gets is just tremendous. Well, now you have to start wondering, do we have to have that level of security for even basic things? For like concerts, as an example. I mean, I cannot imagine at this stage, for example, that there can ever be another open air concert like we had last night and for 3 days in Las Vegas ever again. That nature where you have an open air venue that can seat 20 to 25,000 people surrounded by tall buildings where people can get the perch, get the superiority, air superiority, and shoot at will the way they did. You know, the shootings of the past. You think back to the shooting of President Kennedy back in 1963. The Texas Book Depository was sixth floor was a key element to that shooting. You think to the University of Texas Tower shooting. I believe that was 1966. A person at the top of the clock tower on campus at Austin at University of Texas. With again the aerial superiority over the folks walking below, and there was nothing that could be done at that stage about that. It's just hard to imagine ever again that from a security standpoint we can hold these kind of events, because a hotel, this is the hotel was the gentleman, Mr. Paddock, was on the 32nd floor of this hotel. I don't know how many floors are in the hotel, but there were several floors above that floor and several floors below where. Now that this information is out there, now that someone has perpetrated a crime in this way, it's not like people are just going to say, you know what, you know, especially people who want to perpetrate these kind of crimes, you know, I'm not going to use the information gleaned from his success to make my crime a success. In fact, they're going to improve upon it. That's what happens. You know, it's the human nature. So, and can you screen thousands of people? Can you screen thousands of people in hotels around a venue like that? Reportedly, Mr. Paddock was a guest at this hotel dating back to Thursday night. So he checked in Thursday. He somehow was able to infiltrate 8 to 10 assault rifle type guns into this hotel. They can be disassembled, reassembled on location. But gosh, you know, just imagining that maybe he brings bags, maybe he brings golf bags, you know, whatever means he had. Did he come with all those? Did he buy them while he was there, you know, one at a time and take them up to his hotel room? You know, so the only thing that you could even presume would be, I mean, you can't just search a person. You can't search a person's bags once. You'd have to search them every day. And all of a sudden, then you run into constitutional issues. Can you subject people to random searches in their hotel rooms when they're already there? I mean, I go on many conferences, both work, you know, work related conferences, and then trips to basketball tournaments. I go to the ACC basketball tournament every year, and I'm usually at these events for a week. You know, usually when I'm at an event for a week like this, I'm kind of living in a hotel, except for getting towels. You know, I'll put the do not disturb sign up on the door. Because I, you know, I'm usually when I'm not at the event, I'm writing about something and kind of don't need, you know, the hotel staff in there making noise while I'm trying to do my work. So, but if I were of a different mindset, I would use certainly that do not disturb to have no sets of eyes looking at whatever guns I would be amassing and weaponry and armaments I'd be amassing to perpetrate whatever I may be trying to perpetrate. So it's hard. Yeah, it's now hard to think that kind of event. And now we have to rethink everything. I mean, even at Scott Stadium. And I was at my first response to my wife when she brought up the fact that she was at a concert just last week, open air concert with 40, 45,000 people at a football stadium. Well, most football stadiums, I said, are located sort of on peripheries, right? Peripheries of a downtown or even a city or out in suburban areas in this day and age. And largely, you know, those are the stadiums themselves are the highest buildings. You know, the way seats rise up and that kind of thing, they're usually the highest buildings in their location. And then I thought about Scott Stadium specifically. And, you know, when I was a student at University of Virginia, 1990-1994, two of my high school classmates were – their first year dorm was overlooked Scott Stadium. And I remember one game that was a big win for Virginia. We actually left the game middle of the fourth quarter and went to their dorm room on our way out, stood out on their balcony and watched the game unfettered. Now there's a TV score or one of those big video scoreboards in front. So I imagine that we wouldn't see the game. The field would be blocked largely. But still, we'd have access visually to both sides of where fans are sitting. And if we, again, if someone were to – and dorm room was on a second floor, I believe. There was four floors on this in this particular dorm, so a couple perches up, and you know who knows. So yeah, I mean you have to rethink all those things. And there are a lot of concerts that go on. There's a lot of football games that go on. Gosh, I mean, you know, the fans going to that event a lot were subjected for the first time to new policies in place at Scott Stadium that are now in place at a lot of stadiums and arena venues across the country, requiring that all bags that are brought in be clear plastic bags that can be easily, you know, seen and looked through, so that there's no issue with hiding guns or anything of that nature. That's only, you know, that's something to protect concert goers, football game goers, whatever else, from each other. But again, what about those adjacent buildings? What about hotels that may be in proximity? I'm thinking, I don't know right off about, like, I'm thinking of Baltimore, for example. I've been to games at Camden Yards, certainly the B&O warehouse across the street. I'm not sure about how one can access those upper floors at the B&O warehouse across the street from Camden Yards. But, you know, if someone were to get access to that, could they? Yeah, they'd have easy pickings if they wanted to from that location. So yeah, you got to rethink all this now. You have to, this is something that is going to have impact beyond this event and have impact for some time to come. I'm sure right now there are security teams across the country that are feverishly rethinking a lot of things that they do from a security standpoint for their outdoor events. Another thing that I think deserves to be addressed is hospital care. I talked about the trauma care hospital there in Vegas that had 104 patients was the exact number, 104 first-level trauma patients of the 500-plus that were shot that didn't die. There were 58 so far confirmed dead, over 500 shot and wounded, various levels of injury. And so 104 primary trauma patients to this one hospital. And you have to think, what hospital in the world is equipped to deal with 104 people who all are, you know, on any given night in any hospital in the country, in the world, would be the kind of people that you would assemble an entire team for. You'd have doctors and nurses, etc., rushing to one person who suffered gunshot wounds of the nature that we saw hundreds last night suffer these kind of gunshot wounds. You can't have that capacity. You can't have that excess capacity on hand because you can't. I mean, you just can't presume, because if you did, then 99.99% of the time you would have way over capacity in terms of the ability to respond to these situations. But now that's something else to think about again in big cities, particularly big cities with these outdoor venues, whether they be football stadiums, baseball stadiums. I would, you know, these outdoor concerts and that kind of thing. Big cities with big events outdoors. I'm thinking, you know, I've been to the Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York. I don't, you know, there are locations there where, I mean, there's literally millions of people lining the streets. I don't know that there's 50,000 people compressed into one area like there are, there were 22,000 last night. So at the Las Vegas concert, but still, it's something now that, you know, I'm sure, obviously hospitals have these plans in place, to be able to deal with mass casualty incidents, but 104 people and you know, again, 500 plus injured. You know, I'm thinking about my local hospital here. Now, we don't have a big outdoor venue here locally. The Augusta Health Hospital here locally for our local viewers and listeners in Augusta County, Virginia, Waynesboro, Stanton, Augusta County, Virginia. But, you know, nearby in Charlottesville, again, with a big football stadium, you know, what impact does this have on their planning at places like the University of Virginia, college football stadiums across the country, pro football stadiums across the country, baseball stadiums across the country. Certainly the planning has to – planners will have to take another hard look at their plans and learn from Las Vegas's response. And they're still in the middle of this response, of course, so the learning will come. And lastly, to the gun debate, and Scott, our one viewer with a question. Of course, if you're watching and you have questions, feel free – questions or comments, feel free to lob them. This is for those – now, if you're listening on the podcast later, that won't work. But those on Facebook Live, feel free to throw stuff out there. I'd be glad to try to respond in some way. But the gun debate, this happens every time. And it's sad that we have to say this happens every time, because that means we had more than one, obviously, of these kind of incidents. So it seems like we have – you know, these kind of things happen all the time, and we do in this country. I think the sum of it, and to be short about it, it's going nowhere. We know that. The statement made by the president today, he didn't actually use the word gun or guns or anything related to gun in his statement, expressing condolences for the loss of folks. And those who are battling to survive their injuries in Las Vegas, and that itself is appropriate. You know, the condolences, obviously, but you know, for a president who's so quick to use the word terrorism when it's not always the case that whatever event may be terrorism, you know, the absence of that word is striking. But as far as the debate over guns in America, we can't be shocked anymore, you know, and I've even noticed in myself a response that's different than after past mass shootings. I was always one quick on social media to say, come on, we got to do something about this as a country. We can't keep having these kind of shootings in this country. It's the availability of guns. There are more guns in this country than there are people in this country. And the number of people owning guns has gone down, but the stockpiles that those who do own guns have gone up. And we all know why the Second Amendment is interpreted the way it is. It wasn't interpreted the way it is now for the bulk of American history until the 1970s, when the NRA, which for the longest time was simply a sportsman shooting association in effect, became beholden to the gun manufacturers, and has been advancing a cause that has been good for their bottom lines. And using politics, in fact, using these kind of incidents to drum up sales, as much as they also, out of the other side of their mouth, will talk about how we shouldn't use these kind of incidents to talk about changes in policy. But the debate's going nowhere. This country has long since decided that it values Second Amendment rights over those rights enumerated in the Declaration of Independence about life, liberty, pursuit of happiness. And so, you know, at this stage, I don't even think it's worth having that discussion anymore, because we haven't proven, and I say we, well, I'll start at the top level. The people we elect to office haven't proven to have the backbone to stand up and do anything on the issue of the prevalence of guns in our society. That's because the NRA has been successful in framing the debate to their advantage, and credit to them for that. I'm at heart, you know, I talk about how this podcast is often on the lighter side, sports entertainment fair. I'm also an analyst. I do analysis columns, and I'm a sports commentator for ESPN3, doing baseball and football. I'm also my start came in political analysis, and then I went into the fun stuff a few years ago. But from an analytical standpoint, credit to the NRA, they've won the debate, and they're lapping the field, and have been for years. But then go from the politician level to the we level, we allow it to happen. We allow enough of us have allowed the debate to be framed the way it has, because enough of us have decided that's the way we want to vote. And you know, it's numbing at this stage to wake up. You know, my first instinct this morning when I saw the news was to assume that it was fake news. You know, I hate to use that term, because it's now been popularized by the president to refer to actual news stories that have meaning and value. But I saw the headline actually when I was looking at ESPN.com to catch up on any news coming out of the sports weekend. And at the bottom of the headlines of ESPN was 50 shot and 50 killed at that stage. When I first saw the news this morning, there were over 50 deaths, according to that, to the headline, at a shooting in Las Vegas. And it seems so out of place, one, to see it on a sports news website, and two, you know, I thought I went, you know, I usually stay up pretty late, and I went to bed last night after 12 o'clock after finally wrapping up the news day. And yeah, it's just numbing at this stage. You don't want to believe these things, but then, you know, quickly the realization steps kicks in, and you realize nothing's going to be done. There's going to be another one. This isn't the last. We thought the Pulse would be the last. We thought Sandy Hook would certainly end it. When Sandy Hook, when little kindergartners are mowed down, we thought that would end it. We thought Virginia Tech would end it. To be honest, 32 college students, and I think at least a couple professors. So the total number is 32 killed in classrooms and dorm rooms. We thought that would end it. You know, we have long since proven that we will accept the uncertainty of whether or not we can attend an open air country music concert, or send our kids to kindergarten, or send our kids to college, go to class, whatever we can do. We've accepted that we would rather value the rights of people to have assault weapons that are only can only be intended for the use of mass slaughter, like we saw in Las Vegas last night, or to be used on the battlefield, which is also a mass slaughter situation, but for different means, different reasons. We've decided that that's more important than whether or not we live or die. So that is what it is. And from my standpoint, to get political about it just doesn't make any sense, because getting political about it is just going to make you frustrated that nothing happens ever when these kind of things happen. And so I'll just leave it at sorry doesn't even cut it. The condolences, the word condolences and the issuances of them, you know, feel hollow to me to say, but I still need to say that, gosh, it's just terrible. I mean, those who died, those who lost loved ones, those who experience this too, there are going to be people whose lives are going to be changed forever by this, scarred by this. PTSD is going to be an issue for hundreds of survivors, thousands of people probably, for their lifetime after this. They were on the battlefield last night, and their lives, their children's lives, their parents' lives, their families' lives, their friends' lives, all those, there are going to be millions of people impacted by this directly just because of the people who were there last night. Our hearts go out to them. And there but for the grace of God go I, because, you know, all of us know that we may be, a lot of folks might be saying, I've seen this on social media today, you know, maybe this is the, you know, maybe we don't need to go to concerts anymore. Maybe we don't need to do things anymore. We're going to go. We're going to continue to do what we do. We'll be scared for a few days, those of us who weren't there directly. And you'll still go. You know, I'll go to a football game this weekend. I'll go to a football game the weekend after. I'll go to, you know, open air events, you know, time immemorial, right? But, you know, the next one could certainly be me. And that's a sad reality of life in America in 2017. And so it is. We will get to more lighter topics as the week goes on. We'll talk some UVA sports. Virginia football will be taking on Duke this weekend in a very big game for both teams, but particularly for a Virginia program that hasn't had a winning season in a long time. Hasn't been to a bowl in 6 years. So we'll talk some Virginia football. We'll talk some pro wrestling later this week. And we'll see what else we get into. But for now, I want to sign off both on Facebook and on our podcast. I want to thank you for joining in, and thanks for your time. And God bless you, and God bless America.